think it's ironically.
How do I turn on?
Oh, is that it?
Technology is blowing my mind. Okay. Laptop. Oh, crap. Now turn on. I do not like technology. Why? Why would you do this to me? You wouldn't happen to know how to work this system, would you?
No, I'm the last person you would ask. Let's see, it's about 4 o'clock. You're going to ask somebody in the building. Better do it soon.
Right?
Yeah. Okay, so I haven't used the one in this room, but I feel like it's probably the same as all the others. So let's
turn that off.
Yeah, I think the screen's down. The shades are, that's the shade control.
Seems complicated. Well, this guy.
They should all be the same.
That no, there's, like, there's a phone. Like a button panel.
Like the one in the window one.
Projector's on.
It's on?
Yeah. The projector's on?
Yeah, I see it.
Oh. And
the projector is on.
Yeah. Oh.
But so there should be a. Well, what if you plug the computer into this thing? I'm just going to trace the. Oh, it might be inside. I would have thought they would all be basically the same.
This one's good.
Oh, is it this thing?
I think so. Okay. That's what I've been using, but I can't see anything up there.
I don't think anything's hooked up to the projector, but it is. No, it's not. Whatever you just turned.
I hit the projector mute button, which I don't know why it's called mute.
So now it's on. So then,
yeah, but let's see. And is that
This is
that's connected
to HDMI.
Okay, and that is over here. Might have a funny name. Let's see, other inputs. Lectern HDMI. And
do you have it on a USB drive?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, he's. It looks like you're doing a Zoom presentation.
Yes.
Those are instructions, though.
Oh, okay. But these look really old. If you have your presentation, okay.
Is there an audio cable?
There should be this one.
That's better. Thank you.
Okay. It's saying that it should be going right now, which of course it's not.
Is it
Maybe if you click the. show mirror options when available. Maybe this is.
Try a source over here.
No, I mean it should detect. I'm wondering if it's the problem that the computer is not detecting the fact that something's plugged in. You know, let's try this one actually. This might work better. Yeah. Oh, there you go. So, and then it's arrangement. Do you want to just have them be the same?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, now they're the same. Perfect. So, yeah, should be
good. And now the audio should come through here, right?
I think so. I'm trying to... Let's see, although this just came undone.
So, yeah, let me
see. Let's for a second. It was working. I'm going to move onto this, actually, because I think it likes it better when it sits on this.
Of course. Was it the laptop input?
So the laptop input should be this cable here. I'm going to unplug it and then plug it back in. Let's see if that you think everything should just like work nice. Oh, there we go. Okay. So there's that, and then let's duplicate the two screens. There we go. Okay. So you can either do it that way or
yeah, that's fine. This
is fine. Okay. All right. And then
the sound is going to.
Oh yeah. I don't know if this is set to play sounds. Do you have like a, you know what? There's usually a button that says test audio.
Since the meeting has already started, do you think that?
Oh, I see. I think it tested this. Wow.
Perfect, but you got something. I'm going to say it's supposed to sound
like it. It's not supposed to sound like that. That's what it sounds like right now. It's definitely not supposed to sound like that.
Why is this such a mess? Such a commonly used room.
Yeah, right? I don't know.
Imagine they have like some system or something you're just not seeing that it's like the one they usually use.
Is it? It should be coming out along this thing.
Right. So.
Oh, along this.
Well, it's like, yeah, it's on the. That's what's plugged in right now. Let me, I'm just going to pull up. Is this your computer or?
It belongs to the office.
Okay. All right. I was just going to go to, honestly, just play a YouTube video that has a sound on it. That's like a sine wave. Yeah, it seems to not.
Is it not?
Something's not right here. Okay, let me unplug this guy again and try.
That's the same thing.
Do you have that HDMI adapter? Thanks. Okay.
Oh, I got that one.
Doesn't see this one. Do you have a, you don't have another one?
No, I have one that looks like this.
Okay, gotcha. See, the weird thing is that the video works. It's just something is screwy with the sound. The reason I was thinking
that one doesn't work?
Yeah, this doesn't work, yeah. So, yeah. Is this like a presentation that you're trying to do right now? Or
Zoom, because it's for a meeting.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, I mean, this gets it to go on the screen there.
Do you know if there's another cord around here? I mean, I don't even know where it plugs into.
Yeah. I mean, it must go. You could, yeah, you could call the tech support people, but they also might be busy slash not here anymore. Although, I think this computer has Zoom on it, actually. So you might be able to use this.
The thing about that is I don't know the logins.
There should, I think this presenter one is, hold on, let me try this.
Is it this one? Or,
oh, maybe. This one has one. Oh, it's got extra. Just a box full of batteries. That's really great. Oh, I know. It's in here. Of course. Let's see if it's presenter. No. Admin. Nope.
Oh, why does everything have to be complicated? Does it say that? Doesn't look like it.
Maybe here. Oh, presenter. The password. Oh, it is. Capital P. Render. Okay. And let's see if this has Zoom. Okay, so I can.
But
go
if to, I started this Zoom, then
so it can be hosted there actually, and then you can log into it here. So, do you have the meeting ID number? It might be on there.
151.
Yeah.
Dash. 468-583.
Okay. Oh, I see. Hold on. The problem is this.
Hello?
Okay, so the speaker works. Hello? Oh, did you unmute this? Yeah.
Hello? Yeah.
It should work. I think you should have to, you know, what we can do is...
I think it's working.
It's working, but it's the microphone on this computer.
But the, well, the people, it'll have to...
The people are going to be all out there, yeah.
Well,
it's not big enough. No, I don't think so.
Is there a way to turn on the microphones and stuff from here? Maybe there's
maybe.
Can you also think at this point, perhaps calling Mike Roman may be a good idea and see if he's ready?
Yeah, but he's probably gone at this point.
Might be.
If I can.
If I talk like this, okay, there's a little bit of echo. So this is a little better, and now there's no echo. If I stand back here, that still works. But oh, but you know the problem is people in here. Ah, okay, I've got it. I can mute this participant from this computer. Yeah, you can make it so that. We need that microphone. How many people are going to be signed in from outside of town? okay, so. I called Mike and I was hoping that he would have a good answer for me, but nope. Can't use the microphone. Which is really annoying because you'd think such a nice conference is relevant for that.
Exactly.
Okay, so there is an echo.
Well, we could turn the volume down here also. It'll make it less annoying for people to hear your echoes, but it'll mean that if someone is signing in from outside and wants to talk so that you can hear it, they'll have to like shout into the mic. Right. Because, well, I guess actually it's not so bad because here, when I'm far away from this microphone, someone who had headphones on could hear me. But if someone is talking to their computer like this, then you can hear them. Okay, so I think these are good settings. Because there won't be so much echo from people here, like if they're sitting here. I guess there's a little bit of echo.
Okay. But I mean, I guess that's manageable.
Yeah.
We can work with this.
Yeah. Okay.
As long as other people can hear and this can record, then we're good.
Yeah, everything, I think this is, recording. Everything's good. You probably want to hook this up to a power thing
right
soon.
Here.
And there's plugs. There should be plugs in the floor.
Is that one right there?
Oh, the one that's right there might be.
Let's see. It's a lot. Oh, yeah.
Any corn? That's all. Only Chinese yarn will work.
There you go. So,
you'd think it would be some kind of actuated.
It should be unlocked.
They always make everything.
There's plugs on the edge of the room, so you might be able to like run the cable through. Like there's one right there. So yeah. Okay, so this might end up not being quite.
There's some other ones in here.
are open.
Are they?
Oh,
is it open? Yep. Oh, okay. There we go. That works.
Okay, yeah.
We have been having technical difficulties.
That's okay. So have I.
It's like so crazy.
There we go. Okay, light is green, trap is clean.
Okay.
Perfect. All right. Thank you both so much. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and then
I
guess once you're done up here, you can just close out of Zoom, like once the meeting's done, and then just hit, probably if you just lock screen, it'll be fine. And then
Do we have the agenda for today?
Did you see it on the stack?
Oh, it's further down. Oh my gosh, we have so many documents today.
You want to come collect your documents? I swear there's a whole stack of gifts.
Well, I printed everything you sent out.
Oh, you didn't print it.
You have
no.
You didn't have it. I am sorry that I got to you late. Turns out there's a size limit on the files we can send.
Is there something new from after I printed whatever you sent me? You know, the agenda that came, I just click on each thing.
When did it come? Was it today?
Oh, yeah, this afternoon.
Okay, then it should have that.
This afternoon, yes.
Yeah. I tried to send it over the weekend and realized that it had gone and stopped.
This is the perfect room for a day like today.
There's water over here. Food should be on the way. Do you know by chance know? Do you listen to this?
I have no idea.
How are you?
I have been better.
Oh boy. Prelims?
Yes.
Great. I got that.
They don't have to come down to the wall.
They're shaped over there.
It's just ready.
Do you think it's
in your eyes?
Yeah,
it's one
of those panels.
I
Richard Benson.
Oh, you did your own.
Yeah.
Who read yours? Hi, how are you?
Much better.
Oh, that's very nice.
You don't have to bring it all the way down. There we go.
Oh, it's
a, yeah. Perfect. There we go. We can still see all the beetle.
But we can also see each other.
And we can see each other.
And apparently that's why we're here. See each other.
So, you know, we're here to set the fashionable example.
Okay, so
I wrote my dissertation.
So like I'm here.
Oh,
and, I got here actually very, very early. So like I had the desire to be set up. And so like I'm not
you're going to join.
Sure, I guess that this is right, but like that it's sort of right. So I don't know. What were you gonna have me do so that I can kind of see
Oh,
yes.
Don't forget. Yeah. So, anyway, yeah. No, but I usually sit only last year. You haven't seen back there. I feel like I'm being closer to the place you're there.
Right.
Oh,
right. Okay.
Okay. I
know. That's what I told them. Like, you don't love these in the damn museum, but let's be honest. I'm going to have pressure over the next 2 weeks to make sure I'm hitting this hard. I'm so aggravated. Spy.
Yeah.
On the laptop, and the laptop is sitting. I literally, what? When I took my seat, it went on. I was like,
I am sorry.
No, it's
is
not.
There,
it is
a special snowflake called the Can Start. I'm clearly a member.
I think the special snowflake club has already started.
Okay. Yeah. So like, when I actually
saw some freshmen.
So, like, you're not fresh. I'll have a pen. It's like, sad now. It's okay. I'll try later. Like, what happened?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They still do not.
Oh, no.
I'm the person with no name.
No. Up until now, we haven't known who you were.
He who must not be named.
To be honest, I think this is fine. I've been working with you guys for at least 20 minutes.
Did the GTSA have a meeting yesterday?
No.
No.
Okay.
It is not.
You can also not miss.
Did you cancel that meeting, or is it?
No, it's
every other.
Yeah.
It's every other.
It's every other, but it's supposed to fall on the fall break, so we have it.
After. Oops.
So then we'll be on the same week as.
Yes.
I see.
It's
a fall break. There you go.
It's well needed.
You don't feel much sympathy for us.
Okay.
Well, my daughter, she's a freshman in college, just coming home this week for fall break, so I'm excited.
Oh, where's she going?
She's going to GW. Oh,
nice. There are some fantastic new places there.
Are there?
Yeah. She should take a class with you.
Is it SH?
HSY. Or Jeffrey Dromko. English.
Yeah, you should go.
Super
woman.
Shy.
Yeah.
She's going for political science, but you know, there's
she still might want to take a class.
Yeah. Well, this week she told me she's not thinking for a lot. I've really been there for a month, and you're already thinking.
She's in DC.
I know.
Yeah.
But I wrote that to somebody this morning. And there's a thing in the water. I'm going to encourage you to drink all the bottled water. That's my solution to that. Put more money in her on her account.
Oh yeah.
Demonstrating
how many people studies to be
by white students.
Oh my
gosh. So she would really love it.
I can't wait for the food. I hope it's good. Last time I didn't get pizza, so.
You were lucky by the time I got
that. I know.
Pizza.
Like,
so, last week at the CIC,
we got like two big sheets of pizza, and they were gone. I was like, well, you know, it's fine.
So he gave me some, except I didn't write them down. And, you know, we talked to get him today some apps for like after hours transportation.
Oh, nice. Still need to download the app.
It's confusing. I get confused using it because I don't have the lines, I don't have the routes memorized. Like, what's the 30 and stuff like that. And so, like, I have to, like, click on, like, 7 before I get to. Well, yeah, that's true. But, like, walking from, you know, college town to North Campus is
I don't, you know, when you look at them, if you go to the TCAT website and look at the map online, it's not really clear to you. I don't find it easy to read the map, and I'm not stupid. So
no.
I just kind of wonder, but, so I just go to the system map, you know, because it's more true, and then I find that easier to figure out. Because I can actually take more than one bus to the vet college from my house. But,
what are you talking about? Ithaca is a major city. I don't know.
it's
the New York City of Central New York. Like, actually,
Syracuse. Syracuse, my favorite. Yeah.
I need a French.
Here. So, Ellis, have you moved to a new location?
No.
Have you moved to any? Weren't you displaced out of the tower or no?
Yeah. I've been staying where I'm
just there. I think I'm
Did they're not done? Are they working on it or they're not doing them at all?
They're working on it.
Where do you have one of those too? No people just wandering in, popping in to surprise you because, you know, it's out of their way. I mean, I've been to Baker, but if you're not in Baker, you must have an office somewhere else.
Okay.
And you could tell me, but you have to kill me.
Oh, yes. Most 2 days in a row. Oh, really?
So, you know, Anna, Ed Baptist used to have that problem last year. He would send them with 2 or 3 batches.
Yeah. She just pointed out I should just link to it to the box.
But the way that they, like, what came this afternoon, where you could just click on each hyperlink and go directly to the box. So that was
perfect. And I need to just make sure I have access for them to send me. She showed me how to use it, which is great. So. Yeah, thank you for doing as we figure out technology.
Technology is great until it stops you in your tracks. And then you're
completely. I mean, at a certain point this year, I'll just refer to manuscripts. I'll just send them out with carrier pigeon.
Will we be using inkwells?
Oh.
Have you ever tried?
No, really annoying. I think it would be incredibly messy.
I've tried.
I know.
Is it scratched? Does it make a scratchy noise when it goes across the paper?
That wasn't
across your belly.
It does make a noise, but it was more of like dripping ink everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, because I wasn't used to it.
I actually
did not
have that.
Oh. Okay. Also, I have
like paid the I love it. I love it. Yeah, I didn't know if it was 8% or
from what she told me.
No, is that purple?
Purple jacket.
No,
it's
green.
I thought it's violet. It's royal violet. But look at the sun when the sun hits
the sea. I think maybe it's just like the office. Like,
is that green?
It looks sort of. No, it's not like a heaven.
I missed this room.
I love this room.
That is weird.
Yeah.
Is that
going to
be Ulysses?
Yeah.
No.
Ulysses is just going to sit there in the center. Oh. Yeah. Linda should be there. Hi, Linda. I got that email. Oh, yeah, I didn't send that. And then I got that. Did I get something? Yeah. Okay, that sounds great.
Yes.
Yeah, I totally understand. Yeah, no problem. Oh, yeah, no, everything's been great.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah, I do all
they've engaged. I need to deal with this right now.
Okay. Do we have quorum?
No.
No. I'm not sure. So we have 400 people come to last week's meeting. We have 10 people come to this one. That was three.
Was this something we were
doing?
Or don't say?
I think so.
Combination of both, maybe.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. I had this last night. Okay. Well, I think we need to you guys just meet us at time.
Oh, sorry, we'll change it.
Thank you. Well,
I know Joker is
Yeah,
okay, so I'm not surprised. Because I haven't seen.
I guess you must have been. He's not pitching like you're.
Ulysses?
He's not there.
He's not. Okay, so then he definitely doesn't count.
What about John?
What's that?
I'll text him.
I have texted him. Yeah. That is my
question. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was like.
Or 20 total members.
20 total?
Yes.
So you need
one of them from California. And so we need a button. Ulysses is responding. So I'm like,
nope.
Right.
Are we communicating on the phone with him, or do we
need to call him? This is not set up. I just thought it's set up. Okay. But he's just not. He's just
it's a lineup call.
Here.
Ulysses knows.
Except them themselves.
I know I don't think you can hear me, but if you
can,
yeah, someone just messaged you. Okay, so seeing as we have a quorum, I'm calling this meeting to order. Can the clerk call the roll? Okay, great.
Joseph Anderson
here.
Matthew Taglia.
Excuse me.
Richard Bensel.
Hey.
Linda Cotman
here.
Murphy and the Roo.
Here. Yeah, you should just go by Murray.
Murray, okay. Kevin Fitch.
Excuse me.
Martin Hatch.
Oh, this is awesome.
Robert Ford.
Excuse me.
Raj.
Absent.
John,
excuse me.
Jeremy,
excuse me.
Alice Lowe, Alec Martin,
here.
Elena,
here.
Catherine Quinn,
absent.
Ulysses Smith,
absent.
Carl Van Lum,
here.
Anna Wainwright,
here.
Rena Winarto,
here.
Cancel.
Oh, yeah. I don't have a sign.
What is that?
Four.
Okay, yeah, we're good. So yeah, so the first is a late addition, are the late additions to the agenda. No late additions to the agenda. Okay. Then we'll move on to approval of the meeting minutes. Return to your September 5th meeting minutes. Does anyone have anything they'd like to say regarding the September 5th meeting minutes? That was our first meeting of the year, not our second meeting. Anyone? Anything? No? All right. Then I will ask someone to move the question. Is there a second? There's a second. Is there any dissent to move the question? No. Is there any dissent to the meeting minutes? No. All right. September 5th meeting minutes are approved. Let's move to the September 19th meeting minutes. Does anyone have anything they would like to say on the September 19th meeting minutes? This is the meeting with lots of people. Okay. Seeing no comments, I'll ask if the question be called. There's a second, and any dissent to call on the question? No. Is there any dissent to approving the meeting minutes? Seeing no dissent, meeting minutes from September 19th are approved. All right, next on the agenda is reports from the student assembly. Alec, that's you.
Last week we discussed a very contentious funding issue about the Women's Resource Center. They have a pretty high food budget, and that was something we were talking about. We ended up voting in favor of keeping them funded at their current rate, with a very strong but, that there needs to be some sort of subsidy by the time the next byline funding decisions are made, with the agreement pretty much by the whole SA that at this rate is pretty unsustainable. That was the large majority of our meeting last week.
Okay, any questions for Alec? Okay, so then we'll move on to the GPSA. Wait one second though. You were gonna make a point of privilege?
No. Probably a block or something.
Right, okay. Does anyone, who knows how to bring the blinds down?
They're down. I mean, you can't be
agreed.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
We can bring them it's
oh, it's coming.
Yeah.
It's
okay, then we'll just.
I think it's just because it's coming through that.
Like,
oh, sorry. Feel free to.
Yeah,
just sit along the.
If you want to move back in the room, you have someone.
All right, so we'll move on to the graduate and professional student assembly. Rena, you have the floor.
Okay, so we've had two meetings since I last updated this assembly. In our September 11th meeting, we mainly discussed the resolutions that deal with internal things like bylaws, additional funding, and things like that. And then in our meeting last week, we had several groups like the BGPSA and like the Business Association come to read us their statements starting the campus climate. Right after we discussed and passed two resolutions, so Resolution 4, condemning hate really similar to the resolution 2 that we will be discussing today. And we also discussed then past resolution 5 on the upcoming campus climate task force, specifically asking really number of students and the makeup of students that we'd like to see in that task force.
Any questions for Rena? No? All right, let's move on to the employee assembly. Ulysses, are you here yet? Nope, okay. Then from the employee assembly, are either of you members of the EA? No? Okay.
Kevin.
So there's, okay, so then put on the EUA longer.
Yeah,
I
finished up
Greg
Lindsay's term.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, so then you can get the report.
Well, this will be interesting since I have not been to an EA meeting.
Yeah. Okay. Linda, have you been to an EA meeting? No? All right. Well, then the EA will not be getting a report today. Oh, boy. All right. Faculty Senate, Charlie, you're up.
Yeah, well, we have a meeting next week. And in the order that we'll be talking about, well, we hope to announce the committee lineup for the consensual relations committee in the charge. There'll be a resolution from the UFC on related to like the one we'll consider here today on the recent racial incidents. There'll be we'll have to look a little bit on I spent a lot of time in the last few days just trying to understand how vote changes are made. A lot of faculty are in the dark about that, so we'll try to clear that up in the next meeting. And then there are a bunch of updates from the group that's working on the new orientation, some exam, final exam, policy changes, and so on. So that's next one.
Okay, great. Any questions or comments for Charlie? No. Okay, then let's move on to committee reports. Anna, executive committee.
Apology for not having the agenda and items to everyone in the chat. Coming up in business, we are going to hopefully move our October 31st meeting to any day that does not have a meeting. For those of us with kids or houses we don't want to be in. And then exec has been talking about potentially introducing speaker time limits to our discussions. So if you have strong feelings about this, I would love to hear them. Thanks.
Or like right now.
Or like right now.
All right, Richard.
So what about that current climate?
Currently we don't enforce anything.
Yeah.
Robert's rules often provides for whatever time limits the assembly feels reasonable. Sometimes it's 2 minutes, sometimes it's 30 seconds. So that way it makes, this is where ceding your time comes from. Like, I can give part of my time to Rena to talk. If you don't finish what you want to say in your 2 minutes, or whatever time we decide on, then you just go back on the speaker's list, and other people get a chance to talk first.
That's perfect.
That's what we're not doing right now, but it's practiced in a lot of bodies that use Robert's rules. And it means that you cannot speak for infinity. You said
that's
nothing.
Yeah. Anything else from the executive committee? No. Okay, so then I'll ask that we actually move the Codes and Judicial Committee report to the end of the agenda. This is Matt's last day not being able to be here for most of the UA meeting. His class is over soon. Is there a second? Any dissent? No, okay. CWC, Joe?
So we had a meeting in which we discussed several things. The first off, Martha Pollack has gotten back about the tobacco referendum. She objected to the line about the honoring, but if you read the resolution, just ask us to request that she does. So we're going to move forward with the referendum. We don't need to pass another resolution. We, since fall break is falling on this Tuesday, we would have met then, but we're going to meet it sometime later next week so we can actually get more logistical knowledge down for the referendum, so make sure the public is educated about the matter. We're going to be working with members from Cornell Health, members from the Student Assembly Health and Wellness Committee. They're going to be doing something so that everyone is engaged in this process. We also saw UA Resolution 3 about the strategic plan, which you'll see today. And then lastly, we are continuing our investigation about fitness centers at Cornell University, about the usage of them, about who's taking advantage of different options to make them more affordable, and where we can best implement, you know, some sort of support for people who need some support in using the fitness centers, or you know, whether that be accessibility or affordability.
Okay, any questions for Joe? Oh, all right then, seeing as Naj is not here,
he texted me.
Okay, what did he text you?
So he said he's gonna be sending out an email later tonight with the full determination.
So I actually went to the CIC meeting, and so I'll give you an update. The CIC met to discuss a resolution regarding asking the investment committee of the board to publish a quarterly sustainable investment figures. So they're currently discussing that resolution. And then, that was most of what they talked about. I'll follow up with Naj about that. Liaison reports, have you gone to the TAG meeting?
The September TAG meeting was canceled and the next schedule is September.
Okay. You know what they'll be discussing? No. Okay. Transportation Task Force, Kevin's not here. Council on Sexual Violence Prevention. Catherine's not here. Student Health Benefits Advisory Council.
It has.
I went to the meeting. At the Student Health Benefits Advisory Council meeting, they're basically looking at what they do is they just determine like the cost of the health fee, because a couple years ago students got really angry when they implemented it, so they created a council. So that's just like within the next month or so, they're gonna, you know, announce the new health fee, basically. Campus Planning Committee. Is there anyone from the Campus Planning Committee here? Nope. Well, unlucky day. All right, so we'll move on to business of the day. Anna, you have the floor with the motion to move the October 31st.
So I am open to friendly amendments to this, because December 5th is study period, and there is the problem that this means we may go without a meeting for several weeks as we're trying to do code revisions. So something that has been proposed is that we consider having a sort of emergency stopgap meeting just for code revisions if we do not pass Resolution 4 at our next meeting. With that, it seems like there's enough of us who either have small children or want to be home for Halloween that I am going to motion that we move the October 31st UA meeting to December 5th.
Do people want to discuss that first, or is everyone on board with doing that? Okay, that was a question.
If you just move it, you're sort of assuming there's a certain volume of work that has to be preserved. Why not just, otherwise just cancel it?
Because this seems a lively enough semester, and I think we do have that volume of work from what I've been hearing about urgent items. If we don't have stuff to discuss, I am very open to canceling our last meeting of the semester.
This says nothing about our November meeting, so let's continue as scheduled.
Yeah,
let's continue as scheduled.
All right, so anyone else want to be on the speakers list? Okay, so since the speakers list is exhausted, I'll just call the question. All in favor of moving the October 31st UA meeting, raise your hand or placard. We just have to formally do this. All right, all opposed? Chair abstains by a vote of, actually, no, that would kill it. well, no, not necessarily. By a vote of 10-0-1, the meeting is moved. We will convene on December 5th, and maybe as needed, because otherwise we'll go a month without having a meeting. All right, so appointments to Transportation Hearing and Review Board. Kevin is not here, so we'll just can I have a motion to table? Or did someone have anything they wanted to say on that? No? Okay. Second, is there any dissent? No? All right. The appointments for the Transportation Hearing and Review Board have been tabled. Can I ask that Resolution 1 be moved to after Resolution 4, seeing as Matt isn't here right now? All right. Any dissent? No? This is just for the minutes. That's trying to hope this is helpful. Okay. Good. So now we will move on to Resolution 3, Strategic Plan. Linda and Joe, you have the floor.
So
we're going to talk about consent.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I missed that.
Oh, okay.
You're moving so quickly. yeah, so that's no. Completely my fault. That was just a thing. Charlie, you have the floor. Then Joe and Linda, you have the floor.
I wasn't
Oh.
Sorry, you asked me for time last meeting. My error.
Okay, well then I guess we have 5 minutes to discuss it anyways, so.
Well, here's a topic, which is that we're talking about students and faculty, right? But where the connection has to do with academics, so that this does not include then employees and faculty. And so the relevant assemblies are SA, EPSA, and the Senate. And in thinking about what the end game approval scene would be, it won't go through the UA, it sounds like. We intend, after that the whole thing is done, then in a fairly straightforward way, I think we can do parallel policies that perhaps speak to faculty, staff, staff, student related, so on. But the big deal here is making these policies readable. And if you have one policy with 5,000 different special cases, no one's going to look at it. So it's better to have, I think, specific policies so that people will look at them before they get into trouble, or and then making this easier to read. But is everyone okay? If in act of doing the faculty student thing, we discover that you just have to fold in everybody, then sure, we'll do it. But right now, the plan is to really focus on students and faculty. Does that sound okay?
Elena?
I have a question. What are postdoctoral scholars? Are they considered employees?
Yeah, no. Okay, so they are in the assembly scene, but not in our, when I say students and faculty, I just mean a pairing. It could be postdoc, undergrad, a grad student, undergrad, faculty, you know, they're like a dozen different pairings. And the non-tenure track faculty are in this pool, so are the tenure track faculty, postdocs, researchers, and so on. So all those different academic-based connections.
Marie?
So what is the current policy?
Yeah, it's a three-page, it's a three-paragraph thing in the middle of the faculty handbook. It's quite vague, and general feeling is it's not a useful document to educate people about the issue, so we'll certainly expand on it. It just pretty much says avoid conflict of interest, but it goes into no details.
Joseph?
Two questions. I thought the final policy was going to go through the UA for a final vote, just so there's general support. And second, who will be chair of the committee?
Okay, yeah. So, Martha, I'm meeting with Martha on Thursday to go over what she wants the charge to be and who's on it, but all that's her call. We also want to talk about the approval end game is. Okay? So that just brings up this larger sort of funny feature here that postdocs and non-tenure track faculty and researchers are all part of the EA. And the question is, so I think we can solve that problem for this committee
Now they are part of the EA, okay? So maybe then that does make sense to run everything by the whole, all the assemblies. Do you feel that makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I have Richard, Linda, then Ellis.
So Charlie, my question would be, say faculty and students, are you covering graduate students?
The pools here are tenure track faculty, non-tenure track faculty, all researchers, all postdocs, all graduate students, and all undergraduates.
So graduate students aren't represented?
They have the GPSA.
But the
grad students have their own assignment.
So you're going to do it.
Oh, we have names that I have submitted.
Okay.
We have undergrad. We have names for everything. We have enough. So Martha's going to look at the whole space and figure everything out. Hopefully on Thursday we'll walk out of there ready to go.
Next is Linda.
Yeah, I was just going to urge you to try and make it a comprehensive because, what will happen is there'll be an incident with the postdoc, and it just would make sense to have it, for, employees and faculty because there's so many gray areas, there's so many people who are senior employees, but they're really working with students. And so there's a lot of other categories of employees that work with students, so it's a little bit.
So you think of it. We're probably at for everything.
Yes.
This is a power differential.
Yeah.
But in one case, I have no previous. I was just thinking in terms of getting something done and specializing into other settings. I think it's really important that the document be readable and instructive. This is if there's language in there that I'm just thinking out loud here. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
If there's language in there that's very, classroom. Grading exams, access to labs, and there's tons of stuff that doesn't apply to another group, then they have to go through that. So why don't we, here's a question, which is, we have these, undergrads, grads, postdocs, everyone's represented, we have a lineup, Title IX person, HR is in there, the university lawyer is there, the grad student dean is there, do we need a specific thing for, are we missing something on the employee side? That's the question. Or are we, is the representation good enough?
Well, I would think you want to reach out to the employees.
Okay.
Because there are, there are employees that supervise students,
okay.
And so it's, there is a power. It makes sense to make sure that you don't miss anyone.
Okay. How many?
I don't know.
So next is Ellis.
That's pretty much been answered. We approached this many, many years ago and got into things like undergraduate TAs that grade for other undergraduates, peer stuff. And I sympathize with you in terms of trying to come up with something, but by the time you make a relatedness diagram of who could possibly have a relationship with him, and what about when they're no longer under the thumb of this person, that this student wants to go under the thumb? Good luck. That's all I have to say. I think maybe going for something really simple at the start might be worthwhile.
Richard?
Yeah, just right on that. The principle, Charlie, I think you're looking at is where a faculty member has some kind of judging role over a student. And to separate relationships, and that's a very simple principle. I agree with, but it's not one that we then staff would be indicating. So I think working just on that would be the right way to go. And it's that's the problem.
Would you like to respond?
Well, you have two kinds of there's academic careers,
yes.
And then there's. Rising in the ranks of the employee.
Richard, I don't understand how your framing of this would also include postdocs.
Oh, it would. Well, it would because there's a grading. There's a grading. There's a grading.
it gets complicated. There are formal settings in which students are evaluated by faculty, and that's where the rules would apply. There are informal situations where you're a postdoc, you don't have the student as your classes, but you're still part of a community that shares information. You can't do anything about that. It's the formal relationships that have to be policed, because those are the best way to exercise. So postdocs, if they have you, you're taking a class, postdocs have been teaching sometimes. If they're not teaching, then they're not covered. But if they're teaching, then they're covered.
It
still
does not
appear
to
have
senior
research. Yeah, no. It's a judging, wherever there's a formal judging relationship, evaluating, resource distributing, you know.
So there are more people on speakers, but I actually had one question. Currently, the UA's role in this process is just to sign off on the final policy.
I guess something I'll talk with the president about. So let me make it some analogy to the calendar. So in other words, every assembly sort of voted on something there, right? And the union of all those votes, comments that came up in the meetings, goes to the provost. Now, in that case, everything was any conflict. I would reckon the same thing here. The committee is going to produce a proposed policy. It will then go to every single assembly, right? And they'll vote on it. And the vote plus the comments all goes to Martha's desk, okay? And hopefully there'll be some consistency there, and there's something that will emerge. She'll say, this is fine, and then it becomes this other process that will go on in parallel so we don't waste time. It has to show up and get at the official policy group, right? You want a 6.4x policy at the end. So that's the final thing, right? That's the target.
Okay, Joe.
I kind of want to push back on like employees being in this committee, because I believe that they should be, because there is a unique relationship between some employees that work in like Office of Career Services and Office of Student Services that do have power over undergraduates and graduates, especially in the career services part. Because there is, you know, something might happen, I don't know, not to say that anything, you know, does, or I don't know, but there's that kind of relationship power there, because for a lot of students, that career services official is extremely important in their, you know, time and making sure, like, career path trajectory is there, and I think that would be an interesting place that should be looked at, whether in this committee or sometime in the future, because I think whether there's not, like, formal educational power, there is a lot of power in, like, post-Cornell and Plants Post Cornell.
There's absolutely no question about that. I'm just visualizing verbiage, in other words. So for employees, you have, you know, performance evaluations. You can probably write a paragraph on where things can head south there. And then you have the classroom, you know, TA, undergraduate. You get a paragraph on that. I'm just saying that for the final thing to be clear, you know, better to have a little specificity. That's all. You know, coaches and students. I mean, there are all these different pairings. And so it's not a statement that the employee scene is less important or whatever. It's simply a practical thing that might have some merit.
That was.
But again, going back many years, what we found was that faculty were in fact held to a different standard by parents. It was assumed that faculty were responsible for the postdocs that taught in their lab, that were responsible for TAs, and that parents took a very dim view of faculty hitting on their children as opposed to, you know, someone in an office hitting on their student. I know it didn't make any difference, but we actually did, I could probably look it up, we actually did a poll where it looked like the outcome of faculty were. And I think that came up also at the University of Virginia when they asked what to do, but boy, I mean, we're even about to walk down the same street as an undergraduate.
When you say we, do you mean you worked on some committee like 20 years ago?
Yeah, this was like.
It's 1995 is when you were on that committee.
Yeah, this was a long time ago. So, yeah, not that it shouldn't be revised, but only that
it's very spare.
All right. Did anyone else have anything they wanted to add on the speaker list? No? All right. Then let's move on to resolution number one. We moved resolution number one. So next up is resolution three, strategic plan.
Yep. So Linda brought this to the CWC, and you know, we were talking about the last strategic plan was crafted for the years 2010 to 2013, is past 2015. With the like presidential turnover the way it has been, there has been no steady like leadership to kind of create a strategic plan that will be used. I think the general consensus of the committee was essentially that a strategic plan for the five-year period or however year period that Cornell would write it for would be extremely beneficial to, you know, the whole entire university, especially with so many changes that are undergoing with the new Cornell Tech, with, you know, all of these new diversity and inclusion-based programs that are coming out from Martha Pollack. It'd be nice to see, you know, some sort of steady line of what our goal is for the next 5 years or however long they want to write the strategic plan for. So essentially it's saying that, you know, we want one, and it would be great if the university administrators would work with all the constituent assemblies to help create one that is beneficial for all Cornelians across all the campuses, and I think it'd be extremely beneficial. Did I miss anything? Or that's
just, I guess just in our last meeting, was talking about the that's, you know, one of the things that senior leaders pointed out to me was to have this be part of the strategic plan, and also for internationalization, that's the prime way to it just makes sense.
I completely agree that this is something that should be done, and I was just telling you about this, but I have some professional experience with working with Cornell on strategic planning. I noticed the time frame for this was to begin this semester and to be completed next semester. In my mind, that's a really, really tight time frame, God bless you, by which to do that. Also, in previous conversations, and in the meeting with Mark Pollack, an idea came up, I think, don't hold me to this, but I think this was done at University of Washington or Columbia or some university, where they had a consulting group do something called power mapping, where they analyzed all of the investments that Cornell is involved in, the different power relationships between things like the UA and all the other assemblies and board of trustees and various offices. And essentially there was a report, a part of their comprehensive plan that detailed how decisions were made and why, and without power. And I think that would be a very fruitful thing for Cornell to do, especially in light of everything that has happened in the past month in the school. So,
Richard?
So I think this is a very good idea. But one of the concerns I think a lot of faculty have would be exactly strategic planning, but resources. Where the resources are. What kinds of, you know, what kind of university is going to be. So that means that one of the purposes of this planning should be finding out the budget, which we never see. and should be finding that budget, finding where their constraints have been, place responsibility for the groups, a lot of groups. But the consequences of those mistakes, those blunders, on the substantive goal, focus, and purpose of what it was as a structural institution. So while all the other, you only have one there that comes pretty close to that, that's the Cornell Tech, which I think is relevant. But if you added a whereas that covered those kinds of issues, I think you'd pick up a lot of support. I think it's really relevant that this institution become much more transparent in the way in which it raises, uses, waste, whatever it does with money, and has been doing for the last 5 years or so. And looking forward to what the consequences are. So I think strongly supported, but I'd like that more absolutely.
Linda?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
sure of the time frame for the last one, but I think they did it fairly. I'm pretty sure they started in the fall of 2009 and they were done by May 2010. So I kind of wanted to put a little team under there, you know, to get them to actually do it instead of establishing a task force for 4 months and then starting in 2011. So that's why I wrote it that way. I mean, whether it happens. And then in terms of the financial thing, I mean, Gabe and I have been talking about a resolution for a year now to do exactly what you just said, which doesn't need to be part of the strategic plan. It just simply asks that, you know, there be more financial oversight through the budget. Yeah. So please, if you want to draft something.
Yeah. So I do want to say, though, if you go online, you actually can see, like, general overview of the university's operating budget, like, income categories. Like, that is publicly available. Like, I've had people come up to me and be like, well, Gabe, you know, there's no financial control. How much money are they even spending? I'm like, have you ever Googled this? Because, like, you can find some information, but, like, the specifics, those are a little bit more challenging to find. And I think that, you know, we could definitely use a little bit. You know, sometimes it's like a black box.
Yeah, I just wanted to finish. So one of the other pieces of this, I think the strongest way to move this forward would be for it to go to each of the constituent assemblies, something similar. And so when it goes to the faculty senate, we have a member of our campus welfare committee who's going to bring it forward to the faculty senate. And that would be great to add in, and then we'll just get the best possible package. Because I think if it comes from as a united call for action, that would be the best way.
Ulysses, did you have something you wanted to add?
I think he's on mute.
Oh boy.
No, I don't have anything to add at this juncture. I also can't hear you that well, so I don't want to restate what's already been said.
Okay.
We can hear you now if you want to.
We can
restate.
See you. Yeah. Do you want to ask a question? No. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
I'm good.
Okay, so any other questions or comments on resolution number 3? This is like a big deal, right? Like, this is very important. So I really want to make sure that everyone knows that, like, before we sign off on this, like, we should discuss it and make sure that we present a really good resolution so that this actually happens. So I would just request that over the next 2 weeks, you know, until we meet again, that you
Yeah, and if you like have anything you want to add or anything like that, definitely email myself. I'm more available for the next 2 weeks, so just email myself and you can see if, like, anything needs to be added before the next meeting, or, you know, just so we can come next meeting, have amendments if we need amendments, and then pass it at that meeting, hopefully, because I think, you know, this is so important for this university to have. It's going to make so many lives easier at Cornell, especially for the undergraduate community, especially for those undocumented students or international students who constantly have so much, are at such a will in the current political climate. So having a steady strategic plan, I think, would just be really beneficial. My email is jsa94 at cornell.edu.
Linda?
Yeah, I won't be here at the next meeting, so I just want to officially go on record as voting in favor of this.
I'm
not allowed to do that.
I don't think it says anything about proxy voting. I've never looked at that, actually. I'll get in touch with you about how to handle that. Are you raising your hand or stretching?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just a little bit on the timeline, so maybe that's fine the way it is, but in my experience, like 95% of the value of the strategic plan is in the writing of it. After it's like 5%. So it's the act of talking about stuff, that's the real value. So if you compress it, you may just be cutting out the most valuable part of the exercise. Because it's after 3 years, it's not like someone's going to look up, oh, what did we do? Oh, here on page 21, it tells us. It's just to get a mindset, you know. And I think, you know, if you started it this year, if you really were going to do it this year, you would have started getting things ready in July, so that, you know, we're already in the middle of the term. So, but again, those are just some thoughts about the timeline and what I think the value of the whole exercise.
Alec?
We
So I represent on SA, the College of Art, Architecture, and Planning, and I would agree very heartily with that, is that in the creation of the comprehensive plan, the most important part has been the public charrettes with the students and having people come for town halls and gathering sort of the thought processes of a lot of students that otherwise are never surveyed. And so I would also kind of touch on that in the sense that if there is a mechanism involved with this, and I would love to talk to you, Joe, about this more, that should be like elongated as long as possible. That is typically the most empowering process of all of this.
Okay, then can I have a motion to table?
Motion to table.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, seeing motion tag. Can I have a, I'll just move the question then. All in favor of tabling? All opposed? The chair abstains by a vote of 10-0-1. The resolution number 3 is tabled for the next meeting. We'll now move on to resolution 2, condemning hate crimes. Anna, you have the floor.
So we did not get to this at our last meeting. The goal with this resolution is not yet to take action, but specifically to make a statement. Partially because I think it will be easier for all of us to agree on a statement. Partially because it's clear that actions will be contentious and something we need to think through carefully. So I would ask that we keep our discussion of amendments to things we want to say, but I also understand if people do want to append specific calls to action. Other resolutions. That said, any questions?
I assume everyone's reading it right now. Richard, did you want to?
Well, it's a act two. Very nice. But I have two questions or possible reservations. So 14, 15, and 16 refer to SIAP someone. It's not, I mean, what I've seen so far, it's not clear that Greenwood is a member of SIAP. And what I don't want to do, what I would not want to do, is put a whereas in there that is not factually correct, even though I have someone, maybe a very bad person. Anyway, that was the first reservation. I didn't see the people. So
two things. First thing is, just so that Ulysses can hear us, could everyone try to like enunciate and speak as clearly as possible? I know, I will try to do that. And then the second thing is, it's Psi Upsilon, and Upsilon is a different letter than Epsilon.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. That's okay. I saw Joe's hand, then Alex.
Yeah, so I'm going to push back. I'm going to refer to it as SIU, just so I don't have to go through the pronunciation. But I definitely think, you know, they're never going to, I don't know if they're going to officially say if that was a member because of the, this was underground for so long. And so I don't believe the national chapter will ever say that this is officially a member of our fraternity, because during the time that he would have rushed, this was not a fraternity registered with Cornell. So he's never going to be a real member of SIU, but he was affiliated with the fraternity because, to the best of my knowledge, they were, you know, taking rush classes underground, so that when they would come back this year, this coming year, that they would have people already stocked at the fraternity. So although not officially, what I know of is that this was, you know, unofficial affiliation from previous members of the fraternity when it was suspended. So I do believe that including that language is very, very strong and would definitely send a message to, you know, to that national chapter to say, you know what, there was a mess up here and this needs to be addressed.
Alec?
So they're utilizing a loophole, right? This is a legal loophole because they weren't technically a recognized fraternity. fraternity, they technically had no moves, but there were still people living in that house. There were still people, you know, who considered themselves personally affiliated with that fraternity. And the fraternity donated its house, and I think that's as most of an acknowledgement that we can get. I mean, it's a literal house that they're donating, you know, a week after that event happened. And I, that's good enough for me.
So, because well, because they're addressing them, you said you can respond, and then I'll go to Anna and I'll go to Alex.
I saw you. I have no grief. You know, they're gone, evidently, you know, from a number of different directions. The caveats you just described, they're caveats. Because they're caveats, they weaken the resolution. They invite debate over, well, is this true? When it's unnecessary to the resolution, and it's total, in its totality. In other words, piling on the fraternity in the midst of this resolution. I think it's, well, it's this guy who, you know, he did it, regardless of what his, whether they get a building in which he was, you know, living and so forth and so on. This is a mistake. This is a political mistake. A political mistake to walk onto ground, even though you think, I personally think, those explanations don't do enough. Right? There wasn't a place, he wasn't living in a fraternity, and the national disowns him, everybody else disowns him. Now, you're inviting splitting, right? Splitting hairs that don't need to do. This place is gone. That's my counter.
Next is Anna.
Okay. I would respond to that I think in the phrasing here, allegedly also covers us in terms of not just this has not been brought to trial yet. This is not a crime someone's been convicted of. This is allegedly, but also it's allegedly a member of the tribal chapter outside. But what I would also like to do is it's come to my attention that it's now the former Chai chapter of Sayu's Law. So hopefully this is not contentious and we can then get on with the rest, but motion to insert the word former in line 14 between the and Chai.
So that'd be Kai.
Sorry, I have not done Greek in too long.
That's okay.
And this is embarrassing.
That's, don't you worry, I'm in Greek right now. That's why I'm being a skipper about this. So,
amendment to the amendment.
Okay, so there's a motion to insert the word former in between the and Kai, actually T, whatever. So it's in between the and Kai. And so there's been a second, so we'll now move into debate on the motion. I'll start a new speakers list. So does anyone have anything they'd like to say? I saw Richard's hand.
So if you said allegedly from the former, or allegedly associated with the former, then I'm okay with that. Because there's definitely an association. There's not a membership.
So I'll Alec, and then or, so do you want to take the word allegedly and put it like somewhere else?
One or more
sentence?
Things allegedly associated with the formal language.
Okay. So when you have the formal language, but Alec is.
So Drew Lord, who's the president of the Fraternity Council, also stood by the fact that he was involved with this fraternity. To go beyond that, and perhaps this is a little bit beyond political, but in 2016 they were kicked off because the president of the fraternity locked a woman in his room and sexually assaulted her. I want to eradicate these guys. Just completely, like, I don't understand why they would donate an entire physical facility if they didn't acknowledge at some degree that they had connections to what happened. I mean, do you have any idea why they would have done that otherwise?
I don't need an explanation. The problem, my problem is not, my objection is not that Sayu is not a bad fraternity. Right? You know, I think the four fraternities probably should be gone. That's not the question. The question is whether in this resolution you want to beat this dead horse when it's there is some doubt
Anderson for allegedly associated with the former, that doesn't, then you're okay. You've got your reference to the fraternity, and you don't have to take sides in what has been in the press a rather contentious disagreement. This agreement about whether this guy belonged to the fraternity or not, that should not be an issue in this resolution. The resolution has more important things to do.
Okay. So yeah, so just so everyone is on the same page, we're currently on line 14, and there's an amendment on the floor to make the resolution read, whereas on September 15th, 2017, one or more students from the former Chi chapter of Psi Upsilon, a fraternity no longer affiliated with Cornell University, allegedly, and then racial slurs, so on and so forth. So that's what we're currently debating. We're debating inserting the word former in between the and Chi. And so I'm going to ask that everyone's comments be kept strictly to whether or not we should insert that word there. If you think we should not insert that word there, then make that very clear, and so that we can move on with this. So I saw Richard and Alex both, so next is Elena. You yield. Okay, so then there is no one else on the speaker's list. Anna, what is the question? Okay, so there's a second. So we will now, is there any dissent to voting?
You're not going to forget my amendment.
You didn't make an amendment. So if you want to make.
Then I want to insert allegedly associated with the in front of that.
So allegedly, one or more students allegedly associated with the. Okay.
And it's, so it's amending Anna's.
Right.
So that goes in front of.
So, okay, so there's been a motion to insert in between, so to remove line, to remove the word from and replace it with allegedly associated with, so that it would read, whereas on September 15th, 2017, one or more students allegedly associated with the former Chi chapter of Psi Upsilon. So that's what it would read if Richard's motion passes. That's the motion he's making. There's been a second. You seconded it?
No.
Okay, if there's been a second. So we're now going to go into debate on an amendment to Anna's motion. So that's what we're doing right now. Is everyone on the same page? Okay, so now I'll take a new speaker's list. So if you would like to speak on the motion to amend the motion, please raise your hand.
I agree with Joe and Alex and Anna, and that I don't think bringing up that, like, it's more or less been said that he's a member of the fraternity takes away any resolution. I don't think it undermines it at all. But I do think, technically, the allegedly that you have in there already would not cover any of the things. So if we do agree that we need another allegedly, we do. But I don't think we need to.
Okay, so. Elena, you were the only person on the speaker's list for the motion to amend the motion. So, anyone else want to speak, or we're going to vote on Richard's motion?
Can we call this to question?
Okay. All right. So, there's been a motion. Is there any dissent? All right. Seeing no dissent, we will now vote on whether or not to amend Anna's motion so that it reads, whereas on September 15th, 2017, one or more students allegedly associated with the former Chi chapter of Psi Upsilon, so on and so forth. Is everyone on the same page? We're voting on the motion to amend the motion. Yes.
To amend the amendment.
It's a motion to amend the motion to amend. Okay, so all in favor of Richard's motion, please raise your hand. All opposed to this wording? Ulysses, you're opposed?
I vote no.
Vote no, okay. Sorry, I just want to make sure I get the vote. And all who would like to abstain? Why do you guys all have conflicts of interest?
Just in case.
Okay, so the chair abstains. So by a vote of 2-5-6, Richard, your motion to amend, the motion to amend fails. So we will now go back into Anna's motion to amend, so that right now we're just debating, whereas on September 15, 2017, one or more students from the former Chi chapter of Psi Upsilon, that's what's on the floor. Great.
Everybody. Call to question.
Ulysses, second. Okay, there's been a motion to move. Question, there's been a second. Is there any dissent to voting? All right, seeing no dissent, we will now vote on the language that I just stated. Everyone who is in favor of the motion to insert the word former in between the and Chi, please raise your hand or flag. Everyone who's opposed. Everyone who'd like to abstain. Chair abstains. By a vote of 9-1-3, we are inserting the word former in between the and Chi, so that that clause, I'll just read it so everyone's on the same page now. I use that a lot. Whereas on September 15, 2017, one or more students from the former Chi chapter of Psi Upsilon, a fraternity no longer affiliated with Cornell University, allegedly used racial slurs against a black Cornell student and violently assaulted him. And that is what is now there. That's what we get permitted in resolution if passed. So now I will move back into the original speakers list. So next on the speakers list, actually, was Ellis.
I have a question.
Okay.
This says condemning hate crimes, not condemning specific hate crimes that occurred, these specific ones. Why pick these out? We should just condemn hate crimes. If we went, and I'm not saying this is a motion, I want someone to argue against me. If you went right after line 8 and put in something about Cornell and then jump to it is the 36, we're saying what we want to say. What's the point of being specific about these particular, there may be ones we don't know about. I'm condemning hate crimes. I don't want to get into the fact their address might not be the same or who did what. I'm against hate crimes. I'm against hate crimes in the past, hate crimes in the future. That's what we should be saying, not arguing about should this be alleged. I'm not an attorney. Why are we picking these particular ones out? What's the point? We should be against hate crimes, period. And say there has been an increase in hate crimes on this campus. Period. We are against it. We are coming out against any hate crime. So why did we spend 20 minutes arguing about something that doesn't, to me, even matter? What matters is there were hate crimes. I think there were hate crimes. And I don't see the point of being, you know, spending so much verbiage on looking at absolute specific little things that this guy hasn't been in court yet. Yes, the police have done things, but he hasn't been to court. He hasn't, what do you say, if he is guilty, then we feel this. No, I don't think that any of that should be in this resolution. I would wholeheartedly support a resolution where we go on record as being against any hate crime. We'll do everything we can via the code or whatever to see that people who are convicted or whatever hate crimes get the punishment they deserve. But again, you know, I mean, I sat here and watched 15 minutes go by arguing about whether like Upsilon, you know, alleged or wasn't alleged. That's irrelevant to me. Tell me why should we condemn specific hate crimes that occurred within these dates. Then this has some meaning.
Okay, so Ulysses has been on the speaker, so I'm going to recognize him, and then Anna, since you're presenting the resolution, as we can spot. Ulysses?
Wholeheartedly support what Ellis just said. Also, your clause is redundant now, by the way. At least the way I read it is redundant. But I actually don't support this resolution. And I'm going to briefly tell you why. It's really just because I think while I recognize that passing a resolution and issuing a statement is an action, a resolution, something in the form of a resolution needs to be accompanied by some other specific actions. And the only action steps that are in here that the UA calls on is to call upon the community to do other things. Well, the community actually has been doing other things. They've been doing this for years, actually. And now they're the ones, the UA is actually being responsive to the things that that most of these community members have already been doing. So I think it's a little disrespectful also in a sense to kind of put forth this without coming out with any solid suggestions for any other thing that any other things that should be happening on this campus when we have committees and resources at all of our disposals that have been actively working on many issues around inclusion for quite some time. The other, and again, to second what Ellis said, I think if we wanted to issue a statement, we should have issued a statement, not put out a resolution. I think a statement could have easily been drafted by the executive committee, by whomever, that really could have just come in and said, you know, the UA condemns all hate crimes, bias activity, whatever else you want to put in it, and come to this assembly and said, hey, here's a draft of a statement. Do folks approve of this? Disseminate it however you want to do, you know, however you wish to disseminate it. It doesn't make sense to me to put forth a resolution like this that doesn't come, that's not accompanied with any other specific actions. You're not saying anything about the code, you're not saying anything about, you know, who should be involved in the task force, you're not saying anything about policy changes, you're not saying anything about staffing resources, anything like that. So I'm not really sure what the point of actually bringing this forward is at this juncture, as opposed to just say a statement. If that's the case, write a statement. So I'm not sure how many people on this are left on the speakers list. Is it a substantial amount?
So there are two people left on the speakers list.
Out of courtesy for them, I'm not going to call this to the question, but just know I'm ready to move this resolution. So.
Okay, Anna?
This is going through multiple drafts. I think it's clear that all of us have difficulty knowing how to respond and how to handle things that have been happening. When I wrote the book, just I cited the specific incidents partially to be student use to setting resources, and partially because it seemed worth having a record of why now we felt compelled to speak up and we have not for quite a while. It does not seem to be this body's practice to issue statements that we vote on as a body. If the assembly wishes, I would be quite happy to move to retract this resolution and to bring back at our next meeting a statement to vote on rather than a resolution.
But I just want a resolution is a statement. I think Ulysses, can you correct me if I'm wrong, that what you meant is after the event happened, you would have liked to have seen more like quicker action from the executive committee on behalf of the assembly. Is that my understanding what your intent is correctly?
No. I'm sorry. I'll clarify again very briefly. I didn't mean to make it seem like that. I was simply saying, for example, Jeremy put forth a resolution in the EA that is very similar to this, but also includes very specific action items that it asks or requests of the university. You know, for staff involvement in you know, the development of ongoing inclusion initiatives, for revisions to the code, for additional staff resources to support students in the resource centers and to support staff and faculty of varying identities. Like, there are specific action steps. We did also issue a statement before that we brought to the assembly on behalf of our communications committee and the executive board, and the assembly approved that statement separate from the resolution. So all I'm suggesting to you all, is that the executive committee could craft a statement, run that by the full UA, if really all the resolution is doing is saying we condemn something, as opposed to putting forth an action to the institution. And essentially, the irony of this resolution is you're doing exactly what most people are protesting at this point, which is issuing a statement without any actions. So that's what I'm saying to you. So.
Okay, so next is Alec, then Richard.
Well, I understand where you're coming from. I do think that it is completely, my sense, commonsensical to acknowledge the fact that a Cornell student is hospitalized. Whether that is an introduction to a greater we condemn all hate crimes is a conversation that we can have, but we shouldn't let the hospitalization of one of our students I feel like that's pretty important. I don't know if you'd agree. I do feel that action items should be included. However, I want to commend Anna for writing this because no one else, none of you know us, wrote anything. And also, the student assembly, and to my understanding, all the other assemblies took after this. We took this from you. We edited it accordingly. We passed it to our assemblies. So, you know, that in itself was an incredibly fruitful practice. We can add action items. I don't disagree, but I certainly don't think that we should let this die.
Next is
so, and I thank you too. The resolution. I do think this doesn't end the debate that we have. This is only one part of that. I suspect, for example, when I'm looking at 46 and 47, these recent events place onus on Cornell University to establish and justify. I wince at that. These are very, very few people. And if these very few people can always put an onus on Cornell University to gear up and do a whole lot of stuff, that bothers me a bit, especially if we do it in an emotional environment, which is a great deal of anger and resentment, and so forth and so on. That's a debate we need to have. We need to have a debate about how much emotion dictates what we're about as a university. But this isn't the time to do that. That section, that bothers me. I'm willing to live with it, the hope of this resolution. But this thing on the rest of it, we need a debate. There are very, very serious issues here. And one of the biggest ones is the rights of individuals versus the emotional reaction of the community. This is a very serious thing. So that's my part. I can take that whereas out, but it's not a condition.
Yeah, there it's correct.
Oh,
yeah. I'll put you on the second question. Yeah. Next is Joe.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Ulysses about, in my opinion, the difference between a resolution and a statement. The resolution needs to call for more specific action across this university. If we are the university assembly, I think that we have the ability of multi-constituencies to say, you know what, here's it from our perspective of a cross-constituency thing, and here are specific actions that we will take in the coming months, the coming semester, to actually make the physical impact and the change that we want to see at Cornell. And I would highly, you know, suggest that this resolution, you know, yes, it's great because we are against hate crimes, but I think, you know, resolution needs to speak for more of a specific action, of a targeted action across all Cornell University. So, you know, this can be construed to be like that the University Assembly charges all members of the Cornell community to consider how best to heal these harms. I can consider it by like sitting on my phone for 2 seconds and be like, okay, I thought about it, and move on. So I'm really going to agree with Ulysses that we need that specific action. Where how is the University Assembly specifically going to act? We have committees, we have members at our disposal that we can start using. So I would highly recommend us table the resolution, come back next week with specific items that we can do and specific items that we can go forward with, because I think that would show that we are extremely dedicated to the Cornell community, that we are willing to make a change and not just willing to say everyone else do it for us.
Okay. Alec?
So with 46 and 47, the concern there is that, I suppose I just misunderstood.
What are the problems? I mean, this is a problem for universities generally. But puts the onus on Cornell University to create a certain kind of thing. We're not going to eliminate this. They're going to be. So in the practice, in the pursuit of eliminating these people like Greenwood, we are going to hamstring and we are going to short circuit rights, individual rights to explore and debate issues. It's already happened. I have students come to me every day and they say, look, I want to debate these issues, but I cannot, not on this campus. They can't talk about hate speech. They can't talk about restrictions because they feel they've been silenced, not by Greenwood, but by the majority on this campus. In the pursuit of trying to eliminate all of the oddballs and the really barbaric idiots, you are going to narrow the range of free expression and debate on this campus. It's already happened.
Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Groffman. And I must apologize, I did come into this moment a little late, but on Professor Bensel's point, I just wanted to echo his sentiments, actually. It's something that I've seen and have individuals come to me about looking at stuff that CJC, looking at items the CJC has considered. Individuals are concerned that in our desire to ensure the safety and ensure that people are comfortable on our campus, that we will go too far, that we will curtail individual freedoms, freedom of expression, et cetera. And again, I'm just going to find that. I mean, I've in my time in the assemblies, part of it being in the assemblies, you open yourself up to criticism, and I'm fine with that. But the question, of course, is if we cannot have an informed debate, something that I believe is central to the University Assembly, that is a concern to me.
Mina?
So my comment is just something procedural. So it seems that a lot of people want to introduce like changes and petitions. So is there really a point to tabling? I mean, because in my understanding, when you table something, you cannot change things in it unless we bring it back and do like motion for formal amendments. I feel like, should we be recommitting this and then sort of like incorporating all the changes between now and the next meeting such that in the next meeting, we don't have to spend an hour on this?
Next is Anna.
Okay, so with respect to I would suggest that freedom of expression has always already been stifled on campus. We are just moving the window of it. But this is clearly a very sensitive and very complicated issue. We cannot finish this today, period, from the sound of it. We definitely cannot do that and do some urgent stuff with the CJC. So, Joe, my deep apologies. I motion to commit this, in fact, to the Campus Welfare Committee. I'm sorry.
It's okay, I understand.
To bring it back next meeting.
Okay. That's good. Yeah.
Second. Are you going to meet between now and the next
meeting? We're looking at Thursday, but that's up in the air because of where members are at the current moment.
To bring this back next meeting or the one after as possible.
That would give us more time, especially with the tobacco referendum now.
How about we just commit it to the CWC and like let them know when they're ready?
That's Joe, your problem.
Okay, so we're going to commit it. So there's been a motion to refer the resolution to the Campus Welfare Committee.
There's a second.
Okay, is there any dissent to that? Okay, so then by unanimous consent, the resolution has been referred to the Campus Welfare Committee. Good luck, Joe. Anna, do you have something you wanted to add quickly?
Yes, quick straw poll. Would the assembly prefer that I bring from the executive committee for our next meeting a statement to then vote on? Straw poll, I need you to raise placards if you are in favor of this.
I don't understand.
A straw poll is not a motion. It's simply getting a sense of what people feel like. And in this case, I want to get a sense of whether we feel like having a statement that people can comment on beforehand.
All right. Do people want a straw poll?
And
I'm sorry. We'll do a straw poll. Do people want the executive committee to make a formal statement about what happened without, like, consulting the UA before we do that?
No.
Okay. So then we would have to do it. Then we'd have to bring our statement to the next meeting. Okay. So then
placards up if that sounds
then
good.
Then that's what we'll. Okay.
This is not formally motioning anything. This is just
like
telling me what you feel like. Great.
All right, then we'll bring something back.
That being said, we can also continue to discuss via our listserv or other things. Yeah. This doesn't mean a pause. We can discuss with the CWC or other
things. Okay. Then we'll bring a statement to the next meeting. Ellis, do you have
I just wanted to thank Anna for bringing this before, even if it took as much time as it did. I think it's something that we need to discuss. Thank you very much.
Joe? Go.
Again, if you have comments on it, as I said with the strategic plan resolution, please feel free to email me and I'll bring those comments to the committee when we meet. Again, my net ID is jsa94@cornell.edu. I'd be happy, you know, to sit down or just have an email chain back and forth because, you know, we're going to come up with something extremely specific so that the University Assembly shows action on this.
Elena?
I just wanted to thank Anna for bringing this in and also thank everyone for sharing your opinions. And I'm also just on the camp strongly in support of the statement because honestly, us not saying anything about this is a terrible topic.
Yeah. Okay, so then we will move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the resolution number one, which is appointing members to the hearing boards.
Can we extend the meeting by 10 minutes?
Second. All right, meeting's extended. Matt, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This resolution is, as I mentioned last meeting, it is a mop-up from the spring. It is our intent, actually, this year, through the code revision, actually part of the code change that you will see on resolution four, whether we get to it today or not, is to ensure that the university hearing interview boards are fully and appropriately staffed. A number of members in this resolution, or a number of individuals, I should say, were given emergency appointments over the summer on a temporary basis. This is confirming them. There also are a number of faculty members who will put forward by the dean of the faculty as in accordance with the code, who need confirmation by its body before they're eligible to serve. The intent was last week is to place it in public. So if we should receive any comments as to why someone should not serve, to the best of my knowledge, we have received no comments. And that is this introduction. I'd be happy to answer any or all questions.
Anyone have any questions?
In that case, I move to call the question.
Before we do that, do we want to amend the title? Because this is like what we would title it for if it were last year, right? Like for appointing them for this year. I don't know. That was just like something that I wanted to bring up. Sorry, I was getting water.
Not a problem. I withdraw the motion in that case.
Yeah.
We could add completing the appointment or something along those lines. So,
all right. All right. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, the resolution is now titled Completing the Appointment of University Hearing Board and University Review Board Members for Academic Year 2017-2018.
I can move the question.
There's been a motion to move the question. There's been a second. Is there any dissent to voting? All right. Seeing no dissent to voting, all in favor of UA Resolution 1 appointing the hearing UHRB members, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed? All would like to abstain? Chair abstains. All right, by a vote of 11-0-2, of Ulysses, did you vote? Yes, okay.
I voted in favor, yeah.
Okay, thank you. 12, it should be 12-0-2. Okay, by a vote of 12-0-2, the resolution passes. Congratulations, Matt.
Thank you.
So we'll now move on to UA resolution number four. I just want everyone to know, I just want to point out for UA resolution four, this is a really long resolution and it includes a lot of code changes. So I understand if this is the first time that people are reading this, but like just even before we start the discussion, it's okay if you don't have like questions now, but like, I would recommend that we go back to our constituencies and really engage and talk about this with them because these are really important. And we want to make sure that if we do recommend a code change to the president, that it is done with as much community input as possible. So that's just to preface it. Matt, you have the floor.
Thank you. So those who have been on this assembly for a number of years will remember that we continually, our goal is to be stewards of the code. It is, as Professor Lowe often puts, all we have. And it is something that I think the assembly, and I can say the CJC, take very seriously. It is, bless you, the primary legislative duty of this assembly. And over the past number of years, we've had a number of code changes that have been brought forward by both the administration, some directly, indirectly, some by the judicial codes counselor who serve in essence as the public defender for those who stand accused of violations of myriad of Cornell policies, as well as items that are just not in accordance with our current practices on this assembly or in the university. So this resolution contains 8 code changes. They are meant to be relatively minor and housekeeping. That's also why they have languished. Some of them have languished for a number of years, just because they kept getting pushed back. 2 of them are still actually being final, or the CDC is still examining 2 of them in terms of determining the exact language. But in general, I have placed them on here so that the UA may be made aware of them. And the CJC at our meeting tomorrow will be able to hopefully finish hammering them out, as well as looking at the charge regarding hate speech in the code. I'd be happy to walk through each of the 8 if that members would find that helpful. Noting the time, though, if I would leave that open to the assembly.
I think we extended, so you can go through them now.
Well, in that case, I will run through them briefly. I'll make a note, as I make to everyone, I'm more than happy to discuss any or all of these, the CJC or anything else, offline after the meeting. So looking at the first change, I should also say this resolution is also long because in my experience, the administration is very, very concerned, and rightfully so, about ensuring that process was followed and that the community was engaged when contemplating changes to the code, which is why we state very explicitly the steps we have taken to ensure community engagement. The first change is regarding modifying the length of suspensions for university registered organizations, as well as the statute of limitations for those organizations. This was brought forward by the judicial administrator, supported by the judicial codes counselor, various student groups, and also supported by the Greek tri-councils, although even though they are not actually subject to the code because they're university affiliated. What this will do is it changes the maximum duration of suspension for university registered organization from 1 year to 5 years, with the intent that if a university registered organization is found responsible for misconduct, as of now, for instance, an example of KU's waiters, the hearing board has before it, you can suspend them up to 1 year, or you must expel them. That, in essence, leads to a scenario where there's really not a lot of middle ground. A 1 year suspension in the grand scheme is not that much, but expulsion or dismissal is, in essence, the equivalent to the academic death penalty. This allows the hearing boards more discretion, and it allows them to be able to weigh the evidence and perhaps suspend an organization that has a long-standing history for a number of years, to allow the organization to be, in essence, cleaned out and then to be reset up in a number of years. And in terms of the statute of limitations, this extends the statute of limitations only for university registered organizations, not for individuals, from 1 year to 3 years. This, of course, is taken into context by the hearing boards, and that's something that happened 2 years and 300 days ago is likely going to have much less evidence and much less relevance. But the intent behind this and the intent the judicial administrator brought forward was that for some long-term issues such as hazing, you need the enhanced limitations period to be able to bring evidence forward and to adequately bring a full system of or evidence of a systematic pattern of behavior before the hearing boards. Next is adding discretion to instances of non-compliance with sanctions. This is also requested by a judicial administrator. And in essence, the code currently says if you don't comply with sanction, whether that be something as minor as writing a paper, attending basics, or all the way up to not paying restitution or disobeying a no contact directive, you are to be immediately suspended until such time as you comply. It's in essence a contempt of court sanction. The judicial administrators of the opinion and the committee agrees that this frankly can result in some draconian consequences where small mistakes or otherwise errors for small offenses may result in suspension. This allows the judicial administrator discretion in that regard, saying they may instead of shall. And it also adds a new offense to the code, which in essence is failure to comply with a duly promulgated sanction. And the intent being that if you don't comply, you will simply be charged with another violation, in this case, refusing to comply. And then additional sanctions can be determined by the JA via summary decision agreement, or if necessary, by the hearing boards. The third section is clarifying the role of non-matriculated minors. This is a request from the Office of Risk Management in that the way students is currently defined in the Campus Code of Conduct is incredibly broad, such that any individual, including minors as young as 4 or 5 years old who are here for our summer camp, are technically within the ambit of the code, including all the provisions in terms of procedural protections. This results also, again, in some interesting scenarios where a child who's here for a day or two for a summer class, conceivably, if they're asked to leave for misbehavior, has the ability to go through the entire judicial process. It also has a unique liability in terms of them being minors and that their parents still retain considerable and actually extensive legal authority to act on their behalf. And so in this case, if they are non-matriculated, they would now be taken out of the code so long as they are subject to written policies. The committee commends the Office of Risk Management for working with us quite closely on this. We actually accepted the proposed language verbatim. And the intent would be that, for instance, we, as you may know, we have a number of students who are under 18 but are considered Cornell matriculated students. They would still be subject to the code. I believe we have a 14-year-old in the College of Engineering. That individual would still be in the code. And the CJC was concerned, however, with the idea that whereas the assembly does have the right to request information from any department in the university, that by writing these individuals out of the code, that the committee still have the ability to look in at some of these policies to verify that there's nothing in the court. Not that we expect that, but the largest concern was there are high school students who are enrolled in Ithaca High School and take classes on Cornell's campus. They are, as I would say, about as close to being a Cornell student as one can get. They look very similar. I mean, 17 or 18 year olds taking Cornell classes. The only difference is they are not officially matriculated students. The concern raised by members of the committee was excluding them would remove them from the ambit of the free expression provisions within the code, as well as other protections, which is why the resolution mentions, and I am in the process of drafting, the committee will discuss tomorrow, whether we'd like to add something into the code or into the UA's governing documents, simply ensuring that it is explicitly noted that the committee has the ability to examine these pursuant to our power to pass recommendations on more or less anything for the administration to consider to in essence ensure that we keep in touch with this issue. The fourth change is discontinuing the usage of indefinite suspensions. This is a change that was requested by the Judicial Codes Counselor in the 2014-2015 academic year. That'll be Ms. Amanda Minicus. The indefinite suspension of the code has been in there for a long time. After looking at older copies of the code, it is one of the older provisions of the code. The intent of it was originally to say, you have done X offense, say you stole something, and after restitution and you've shown growth, you'll be allowed back in. And the reason it's indefinite is however long that takes is however long it takes for you to come back. Unfortunately, what has happened over the years is you find students who are stuck in a state of limbo. I actually reviewed the public record of the Office of Judicial Administrator looking at this. And it's an interesting scenario. You say, oh, what is growth? And it's a bit of an ethereal standard. And because of that limbo, there's the current Judicial Administrator, Michelle Horvath, has stated she does not seek, nor does she wish to utilize indefinite suspensions. And furthermore, that the hearing boards and the summary decision agreements have a number of other ways to monitor for personal growth or the other things that indefinite suspension used to be utilized for. Therefore, this is removing indefinite suspension from the code. There is a footnote, however, that there are a number of individuals who are still indefinitely suspended. They will remain subject to the appeals process as written prior until such time as they are either so far gone that it is no longer plausible or they have been readmitted. And then moving on to examining the misuse of confidential information. In full disclosure, this provision is still under active or still under discussion by the committee. For those of you who are aware, in the spring, this past spring, there was an incident regarding the alleged disclosure of alleged confidential information that opened up a what some would argue is identified hole in the code. And the hearing board in that case publicly stated that under their impression that conduct that was committed was wrong, but not a violation of the code as written, and that it was incumbent upon this assembly and the Code and Judicial Committee to act if they felt that this should be covered. The concern, as you may imagine, is this university, and I imagine many, it's well known that the university likes confidentiality. Some would argue they over-confidentialize, which I'm not sure if it's a word, but that's what we'll use. They use confidentiality very heavily. And the concern was, will that stifle discussion? The committee has attempted to draft narrow language that will say that if you agree in writing explicitly to confidentiality, where it's explicitly known, and then you break the confidentiality, that is a violation of the code. It falls into the idea of freedom of responsibility and also that the actions you take, once you enter into an agreement, you are bound by it. In the real world, it would be a court proceeding in Cornell. It would be the campus code, and the hearing boards would obviously weigh the evidence and act as they normally do. And that's what we're looking at. The committee, again, we're still considering exactly how to best narrow this to ensure that it hits conduct that I believe many would argue is not up to community standards, while not being so broad as to allow the administration carte blanche in terms of unwittingly ensnaring individuals. Looking at number six, then we're looking at the University Hearing and Review Board appointment procedures. These are This is also aligning the hearing board procedures with our practices. This is something that had been considered in the 2015-2016 academic year. And it also was brought up again by President Pollack in her acknowledgement of our appointments in the spring, in essence stating that the UA traditionally has appointed seniors or other students entering their final year of study to one-year terms on the hearing boards. The code technically does not allow that, and it is simply adding that. Additionally, we have also traditionally allowed members on the hearing boards who wish to continue service to do so upon notification. That, again, also was not previously written into the code. This would add it and enable the committee and then assembly to confirm individuals who continue their terms. This also is part of a larger examination of UHRB staffing process. As I mentioned, the CJC is looking at that in terms of streamlining it, and also the logistical management of the hearing boards has come out of the Office of the Judicial Administrator and is now being handled by this assembly, the CJC, and the Office of the Assemblies, and we commend and thank them for that. Moving on to number six, this is also currently under discussion as well. This is resolving what I would argue is a typographical error in the code. For those who will remember, prior to 1999, the code required the JA was only allowed to serve a maximum of two terms, reflecting an earlier era where the JA was generally an internal hire. And that was removed to allow the former JA, Mary Beth Brandt, to serve. She eventually ended up serving for a total of 16 years. And because of that, the code as currently written requires the chairman of the university assembly to convene a search committee in the October preceding the expiration of the JA's term. Also, the JA's term used to go January to January, which is why it was in October. And examining that obviously is not our current practice, not a practice that's been followed. However, the intent of it, the committee is of the opinion, and examining just some of the older documents, is that the whole idea of the search committee was to solicit community feedback. Mary Beth Brandt, in both her oral reports, informal conversations, and her written report, just cited to in the resolution, mentioned her desire to have more formal feedback from the assemblies and the community to ensure she is best able to do her job. And also, of the opinion that when she is directly before the assembly with a pending vote to confirm or not, that it is very difficult to have a candid conversation. So the committee is examining and to put this language so that we will, 6 months prior to expiration of term, mirroring somewhat the procedure used for a search, there will be a committee convened consisting of two members from this assembly, two members from the Office of the President, the Judicial Codes Counselor, and the Chair of the CJC to meet, provide feedback, and then provide a recommendation to the president about whether, in terms of whether or not they believe the JA should be appointed, reappointed, with the intent of doing that for at least 4 months prior. This also allows that if the JA should choose to not see another term, we can begin the search process expeditiously, or if the recommendation should come that they be asked not for another, or not reappointed, they have time to locate another job, and it is a much more seamless professional transition. The intent also is also to not step on the president's prerogative. The president's sole prerogative is to choose to appoint, to nominate, say, the judicial administrator. This is very clearly attempting to not do that, rather to provide context and feedback and allow the community to air their opinions. Moving to number seven, or actually, I believe there's a number right there, but we'll fix that anyways. Number seven, which would be clarifying no contact directives. This also was requested by the 2014-2015 Judicial Codes Counselor, Amanda Menikas. In extreme cases, the code allows for interim measures called no contact directives. In essence, it's a temporary restraint. And they're done as an interim measure prior to the assertion of responsibility or guilt. And in the Judicial Codes Council experience, they were occasionally issued one-sided no contact directives. Oh, John Doe is accused. John Doe may not see John Doe number two. And there are instances where the other individual would antagonize or otherwise goad the individual to break in the no contact directive. There are, we were told, a number of anonymized instances due to the confidentiality concerns. And the current judicial administrator actually shares this concern and says she will only issue mutually binding no contact directives, primarily because the evidence has not been heard, there has not been adjudication. The idea is that we are aware of a concern. The idea is everyone should stay as far away until we can sort it out. It also allows the judicial administrator discretion in that if a no contact order is violated, the code right now says the JA has the ability to, in essence, suspend you. This adds discretion, saying the JA is not required to suspend you. They also can add additional interim measures as they see fit. And I also must confess, there actually was something that you see, we forgot to add to our agenda. There also was copying language for an appeals process, so that if a I know kind of orders in place for after a certain number of days, you'd have the ability to appeal it, because there is also evidence that there are individuals subject to interim measures for going on 6 to 9 months. And without an appeals process, they're in essence were stuck in a state of limbo. So that is the code changes in touch more than a nutshell. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
So there are a few people on the speaker list, but
motion to extend time by 5 or 10 minutes. 5 minutes, let's do, says.
Yeah, we'll start with 5. Okay. Motion
second
to extend by 5 minutes.
Second.
Second, any dissent?
Dissent, but
oh, you dissent?
Don't worry about it. Keep going. It's faster.
We're going to extend the meeting by 5 minutes. Next. Okay. So next is Linda.
Yeah. You know, most of this is stuff that needs to get done. I'm really pretty concerned about 5. It's, you know, and so that one, I think you may need to have more input on. A lot of things that are confidential, like you said, on staff here. Almost everything I write is confidential. Something else. It's a very, very difficult thing to say if you see something happening that's wrong. I just have, you know, in light of transparency and light of free speech, I think that one is going to be more problematic than these other adjustments too. It actually is an impingement on people's right to speak up if they see something. So that one is, I think, maybe separating that out and having that as a separate one might help you process this.
They're respond to argument.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Here, so if you have a question directly for Matt, I'll let Matt respond. So,
so just to note also, and this is a very long resolution, the university administration has asked, the CDC is going to be doing a code evaluation. The intent is, to essence, to clear the docket of things that have been languishing in some pieces for years, and then to do that, the administration has agreed with that. The administration has actually asked for omnibus, in essence, to do it and then move forward. In terms of the actual confidentiality, that's the concerns have been echoed by a number of individuals on the committee. The idea was, though, the concern was that if the administration doesn't have the code, they will start resorting to non-disclosure agreements and possibly legal action. For instance, and it's also the concern here is that the idea is to be narrow, that if you sign explicitly sent in writing to describe confidentiality and then you go back in your agreement, the code actually can, there are other ways the code might hit that, which examine in essence in terms of just, so we can, the JA may just may continue to do that. The idea is to try and make it narrow, and that if you agree to not do something and you do it, the idea of whistleblowers, protections, that's always, we have the blue, I won't say not the blue light, but there is an anonymous reporting service, which is named, now escaping me, in terms of if you see concern, but it's also the idea that if you freedom of responsibility, if you choose to do it, or the idea that's brought forward is you choose to do it, the hearing boards will then have to sort out what they think is necessitated response.
Next is Joe.
Yeah, so I'm gonna echo Linda's point. I think that's I would rather have that be a separate issue that we tackle rather than in this whole entire omnibus, because I think it just gets really sketchy for a lot of things. And so just for the transparency of the community, to allow them to correctly and effectively comment to us about that sort of thing, I would really highly recommend, you know, that get its own, you know, resolution, not in this omnibus. I just have 2 other questions. You mentioned a lot by the 2014-2015 JCCs. Have the current JCCs commented on
they,
that?
They agree with these.
They agree with them? Okay, yeah. And I don't know if you have any records from the first code change about the extension of the suspensions to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
What student groups were specifically asked? I don't know if you have that on.
So I will note that we received a message from the Greek Tri-Councils, who actually currently are not under the code.
Yeah.
They're affiliated organizations supporting this. Mm-hmm. Actually, there is talk of bringing them back under the code. But the idea, again, of granularity, and that if you're an organization, you sit there and you go, okay, a one-year suspension, considering that the members, frankly, who may or may not have committed the led to the infraction, would still be around. The hearing boards are more likely to sit there and go, we can't have this, we're going to get rid of something, and the concern therefore. So that's really where it came from. I can check the records to see what exactly commented.
Yeah.
That being said, we're open to it.
Okay.
Just a mistake, the administration has explicitly requested an omnibus, so if this gets carved out, it likely will, in essence, wither on the vine. And also to the assembly, the CJC in particular
we try to be responsive to not only the needs of the community, but also the requests and needs of the administration. There are valid concerns for confidentiality. The idea is to try and thread the needle, and in essence say, that's why the language, that's why CDP is still looking at this, but also why language is meant to be so narrow, and that if it's really, you have to do X, Y, and Z to violate the code or to be subject to this provision. That being said, we are open to any comment, but the idea is that I did receive feedback from a number of administrators after the spring incident saying this is a concern, that if the code doesn't cover this, that there may or may not have to go into other areas, including the legal process, which is, I would argue, much less useful and frankly a lot more deleterious to individuals if they feel that is necessary.
Richard? So, Linda and Joe are both really sympathetic to those arguments. I was a strong supporter of Mitchell Pride last spring. And in those debates, I mean, I attended all of his hearings, his defenses. This is really, in some ways, this is an expansion of freedom of speech rather than a contraction in the following way. When they charged Mitch McBride in spring, they charged him with a misuse of a document. And the misuse of the document was read so broadly that almost any action that a student might take, and we uncovered all kinds of it, that in the campus code should be addressed, one of which is that senior administrators have an incredible amount of leeway in doing these things over students. And there's no redress, there's no office. But the point is that this misuse of documents, in the end, after it costs Mitch McBride probably $3,000 or $4,000 and a great deal of stress and so forth and so on, because he had to get legal counsel. The struggle to getting legal counsel and so forth, these are all problems that have to be addressed. But what happens here is this explicit written agreement creates the space in which you know it's confidential. And if you don't agree with that, you don't sign it. You're not there. But if you do sign it, then it allows, and this is the other part of the, not just the administrators, but other people in that group to know they can speak freely without being reported, so forth, to the outside. It's a complicated issue, but if the explicit agreement protects the individual from this misuse, phrasing, and these other devices that are available to the administration. In the spring, this misuse phrase was used to squash what basically many of us thought was a whistleblowing act. That the student was releasing a document that many people in the Cornell community would have been reluctant to approve. That's putting it fairly mildly. And whistleblowing, that's still going to be an issue here. You can still sign this confidentiality thing and it still comes up and you whistleblow. And you're still going to have problems with that. Whistleblowers always have problems. But this was a particularly egregious case. I think in the end, it's the right thing to do in a very complicated issue. I don't mind more debate on it, carving it out or anything else. But I do think in the end, given the experience we've had with that clause, this is a very reasonable way to go.
I have a motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes.
That's so moved.
Grant dissent. All right, Joe.
So I'm going to push back on that. I understand, I agree with the point, but my concern is if you sign that document and you say, I don't want to sign that document because I still want to have the ability. Essentially, a lot of these committees will then only find members who can sign that document where they have that. Because in the case where, he kind of said, they're trying to take financial aid policies and hurting essentially low-income students, if he didn't sign that document, he would have never been on the committee. So it's essentially administrators trying to say, well, if you agree with us, you'll never be able to say you disagree to the public. So I want to say, like, those documents are going to, if we only say, well, if you sign it, you're now fully responsible, because I don't agree with, you know, that intent, that sort of thing, because, you know, you may sign it one day thinking you're going in for one reason, but then the next day they're having you, you know, essentially hurt other students. I think for a lot of students, that would put them at a moral, like, quandary, essentially. So I'm still really skeptical. Of course, we're going to have to see the exact language, the way it reads, and so that's why I'm really skeptical of putting in the omnibus sort of code change bill resolution, essentially.
Thank you. Actually, to Linda's point, the ethics point is the way to anonymously report any unethical behavior. It's handled by a third party, so there is, that's what it's called. I guess the, and to Mr. Anderson's point, there is a, the administrator, actually, I've been on chair for a while. The last big leak was regarding the student health unit that was first announced. And I can say after that, for at least a year or two, you mentioned the administration will just find people that will sign the agreement. What the administration will do and does do, they simply just won't talk to students. And I've seen that happen. They simply are very skittish to talk to students. And even now, looking at some of the feedback I received from administrators was, well, if we can't actually hold people to their agreement, I mean, if they say, this is confidential, sign this agreement, you know, here's what it is, they just won't have students and they won't have community input, which I would argue is the worst thing. I mean, Professor Bensel has a very excellent point. Whistleblowers will always face a conundrum. There is a way to report unethical behavior, but the question, of course, is there are discussions that need to be had. I mean, even for those members of the student or student assembly, you all sign confidentiality agreements to look at your byline funding packets. So if you'll note, I mean, something like the programming board, those attendance numbers are confidential because they have a contract. And actually, there's other concerns that raised by some byline orgs that if they can't hold, I mean, those agreements say under penalty of the JA. Right now, the code, in essence, the prior precedent from the McBride case would just say, well, we can try it, but the hearing boards would likely come out the same way. Which, so the idea is you need to be able to have a confidential discussion. There's a lot here, but I mean, the whole idea is you know what you're walking into. It's not, you know where you stand, you have an ability to, okay, you either sign this agreement and you're in, or it's gray and you're not. The idea, in essence, is that the administration must follow a series of steps, which you must explicitly agree to do it. And it's also, to Professor Bensel's point, there are places and ways you can change the code, because the code says to violate any duly promulgated university policy is also a violation of the code. And there are policies on data security. So in theory, the administration could go through a very myriad of other ways. So in terms of if they really want to twist it, I would argue it's inappropriate, but they could. I would argue it's better to have it clear where we stand. That being said, the committee will obviously, this assembly will have to decide what the path likes to take.
Can I respond just briefly?
No.
Alec.
Are you going to go?
Thank you. You keep saying, like, the administration wants this, but I really do question that, you know, the administration wants this, but also there are students that don't want this. And so that's why I really want to, you know, not have this part of that omnibus, because administrators will always have their opinions about what the code of conduct should look like. So do students. And so that's why I think keeping it in this sort of language, keeping it sort of with all these other code changes, will really present an issue for the Grand Cornell community, because if it's just administrators having that ability to say, well, we want this, students really need to get in there with this community input, and that's why I don't want it as by itself.
For the record, I have received numerous students who have said that they believe this is important to them. So just,
I mean, I'm not saying the issue isn't important. I think the issue is important, but I think when we create the code change, it really needs to be by itself so we get the grant community input.
Richard, and then that's it. I'm just talking.
So right now, standard procedure by the administration is to give you form to sign. And you sign it before you deliver it. So that all the code does is codify that part of it. What is left open is if they don't give you a form to sign and you release, they can go after. That's the reason why it's a protection. But I'm really sympathetic. I mean, really sympathetic to the freedom of speech argument that everything should be open. But boy, making everything open, we can think of that as a principle, but I think with math, you also have to think of the effects. If you make everything open, you're going to make everything closed because they won't do it. So the principle part of it, I
so
agree with you.
What about the forum? Okay, I understand. All right, so we just lost quorum.
So we are
Okay, yeah, so we run out of time. But I would ask.
ask a couple. So first of all, I would ask that we enter a committee of the whole, which is where we can essentially have discussions that will go on the minutes. But it will specifically say that the university assembly was not adjourned. So we adjourned because we lost the quorum. But I'm going to ask that we enter a committee of the whole to continue for the last couple of minutes so that Matt can give his report that was requested at the last meeting. Thank you.
Are the conditions that's what we talked about and not
discussion? Yes. Sorry, I had to cut you off. Okay, great. Okay, so the UA meeting was adjourned, but we are now in a committee of the whole. So I do. So now we're in a committee of the whole. Matt, can you give your report from that that we requested?
Absolutely.
At the last meeting? Great.
Well, in terms of the report, also includes these. So please feel free to contact me. I said I'm happy to discuss these. We have received a lot of input already from students, especially on the confidentiality provisions. But in terms of the primary reason that I suspect we're extending this is in regarding exploring how the campus code of conduct deals with hate speech. As you may imagine, it's a very large goal. I actually have a meeting in about 5 minutes with an individual who's a member of the committee who we're looking at to chair a working group who will, you may know him, his name's Connor Hodges, he's been on the committee for 4 years. He's an excellent individual. He's very well respected, very now, very attuned to both sides of the issue. And so we hope to, hopefully, I'm hoping he will accept. But the idea is to create a working group that will look at this. I have a number of individuals who are interested. They will report back to the committee, and then we will then determine what language, if any, is brought forward by them and how to do it, because the question, of course, is was mentioned, there is a very strong concern about freedom of speech, freedom of expression, and how do you balance that without having a chilling effect? The committee is very aware of these, and the committee, even in our representative code changes, the reason they took years is that the committee is very deliberate with exploring both sides of the issue and determining what are the unintended or otherwise knock-on effects of any change we make. So the intent is to do that. Hopefully then we're hoping to have a community forum sometime after fall break, not the first full week after fall break is what we're aiming for. It might be a little bit after, depending on availability scheduling. And then our hope is to have at least some idea of where we are, if not language, to the UA by the middle of November. I will say the committee has made it clear to myself, talking to the individuals, that we are going to give it everything we have. Our meeting weekly, I think we have 6th and 7th meeting tomorrow. So we are working very hard, but there is, in terms of getting this right and getting something that pass the committee, pass the assembly, and possibly have to pass the president, it may take slightly longer than planned. That being said, we have a timeline to see what's the best chance of attaining the goal as given, and we will see where it goes, and then there's not much to say until that working group is underway. We look forward to working with us.
I like your question.
How are the members of the working committee?
So we have two members from the CJC who are interested, and that's also the chair. They will be reporting to the CJC. I have a few law students who are interested, and it's just a matter of figuring out. The key is really to find individuals, and they are chartering seeking community input, because that is the key point. But because they're actually trying to figure out the nitty-gritty and possibly some draft language, because people have experience with the code or experience with statutory construction. In essence, you need to write it in a way that is the committee's not going to sit there and go, well, this is great, but it's not the word is justiciable, which means it's not enforceable. I can't actually give this to a hearing board and say, okay, here's a standard, adjudicate it. We just say, hyperbole, hate speech is bad. We agree, but I can't do anything. I mean, that's not going to help us actually do
right.
something.
Right.
So the goal is to get people who are more experienced and have that ability, and then have them with the committee get cast as wide as possible in terms of community input. That being said, if you have anyone who you think is interested, please send them my way. We'll be happy to. The working group will be open as well. So if someone, even if they're not a formal member, it's more or less all who come will be heard.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions for Matt regarding that? No? Okay, then I'm actually going to request, I guess, a quasi-executive. I mean, it will be an executive session, but we don't have quorum, so it's like technically just like a convening of UA members. Just really briefly to give, a little bit of a report from me for a couple of minutes, and then everyone can go. So I just wanted to do that executive.
So
there's
an executive meeting that we can stay at.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's not an executive board meeting. It's just an executive session.
Well, executive board meetings are open to the public.
Yeah, just a couple.
Also, for the record, I just want to thank my committee. They've been very dedicated to the fact that they're meeting weekly and doing quite a lot more than they are used to. And they've worked very hard, and I'm very happy to have them working.
them my thanks too, because they need that omnibus change. That really good.
Well, yeah, that's so. I'm gonna, Gina, should I close this?
Ulysses is a member.
Well, he's gone. Yeah.